Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
We are going to be chatting to Professor Adrian Buren. He is the acting executive director of the National Institute for Communicable Diseases. And we are going to be talking about the healthcare workers and the vaccine. So lots and lots of moral outrage over the last few days. Twitter getting really, really upset. There's lots of virtue signaling. How dare people jump the line? How can they get in front of it? I think it's absolute drivel. That's my view on it. I believe that the anger should be directed at government. Since February, when they started this program, less than 500,000 people have been vaccinated. That's less than 5,000 people per day. It is a shame and an absolute disgrace. Instead of turning on each other, we should be holding the people accountable that need to be held accountable. Anybody, any health worker who really wanted to get the vaccine by now should have and could have gotten it. Even if they registered and they didn't hear back, they could have gone there and they could have made a plan, just as other people have started to do, to get the vaccine. So I'm not buying the self-righteous virtue signaling that I'm seeing everywhere else. And I actually feel quite strongly about it. In the beginning, I felt it was morally absolutely incorrect and wrong to get in front of doctors and nurses who are working on the front lines and take their vaccines away from them. But 3 months later, 3 months later, everyone who is a healthcare worker that could have got the vaccine would have gotten it. And I know that I'm reading stories about somebody's 69-year-old aunt who has been working in the ICU unit for 483 years while suffering from diabetes and high blood pressure, as well as 15 other comorbidities, and she hasn't got it. Well, it's because she hasn't gone, and it's because she hasn't really wanted to. So I think let's drop the virtue signaling. Let's stop judging. Let's stop judging our community, as I'm starting to see happening as well, and just get on with it. I believe if you could get the vaccine now, go ahead and get it. Go and stand in line, go and beg them, make a plan to get it. I think there's absolutely nothing wrong. Of course, you will probably disagree with me, but that is my view on it. I'm fascinated, actually, to hear Professor Adrian Buren's thoughts on it. Professor, I'm not sure if you heard my little diatribe there or not. You might have missed some of the best parts. I included pregnant pauses and everything.
Sorry, I didn't get to hear your comments.
All right, so my comments are basically as follows. Is there's a lot of self-righteous virtue signaling, in my view, about people who are saying that, you know, the healthcare workers haven't all got the vaccines. Why are people jumping in line? And my comments are very simply that I think our anger should be directed at government, not the fellow citizens who are absolutely desperate. I think it's horrific that in the middle of May, we have only seen this number of vaccines having been administered. And I also believe that just as people have been walking off the street and asking for vaccines and getting it, which I think is absolutely wonderful, so any health worker who's really wanted the vaccine would have gotten it by now. I don't believe that anybody who is a healthcare worker and who really intended getting the vaccine should have and needed to wait until now to the last minute before scrambling there, tearing their clothes in absolute horror that they haven't been able to access it yet. I think that they are just as responsible as everybody else is. I think there's a lot of virtue signaling going on, and I think we need to just put that judgment aside. As many people that can get vaccinated should be, and that's my view. You probably strongly disagree with me, and I'd love to hear that.
Well, yes, I think it has been, I suppose, problematic in that the rates of uptake may have been slower than it has been. And I think that has centered around the fact that I think South Africa as a whole, and within particular, you know, the groups that had the access early, the uptake may not have been at the rates that we expected it to be. And I think that obviously as we now face the close of.
Well, exactly. So everybody's now panicking. But I believe, absolutely. In fact, I had an argument with a friend of mine who's a healthcare worker yesterday, and he went and he was complaining about the lines. And I said, well, why didn't you go before? And he said, well, he was waiting for his time. I said, be honest with me and yourself. If you wanted it, you would have got it. I know you. I know what you are capable of. And said, you're probably right. And, so I think that's, I think we can't ignore that side of it.
No, absolutely. I agree that, obviously, as well as you do know that this is a voluntary, it's not a, healthcare workers compared to New Zealand, I think. Here, it's a voluntary whether or not you want to have the vaccine as well. And I think that probably does add, to that sort of hesitancy and waiting, for the last minute. And I think that's probably created some of the problems that we are currently seeing. Yes.
So where are we with this? Is this so-called trial or the Sasonki rollout ending? What happens if you are a healthcare worker and you haven't accessed the vaccine yet?
Yeah. So that'd be interesting to see. As I understand it will end, I think tomorrow. I'm not sure what the negotiations would be to have some degree of extension to those particular individuals. Mm. That may have to access it. That's probably one sort of compromise. I'm not sure what if it's a trial, does it simply close its trial requirements and says that's what we've recruited, or is there some sort of leeway to negotiate that those individuals can still access the vaccine? I think the complication, of course, is that Monday is supposed to be the start of the expanded public access to vaccines, and if it's the same sites, then I think that will really complicate matters and confuse matters as well, in terms of the access.
I know that the NICD isn't necessarily or specifically involved in this, in the rollout at all, and I just want to clarify that for listeners as well, before I get a barrage of questions, and accusations that you actually have absolutely nothing to do with. So just to clarify that, but
if I'm waffling a bit on some of these things.
No, I just wanted to make it clear as well. But the question is this is we're now moving over, I would imagine, from the Johnson & Johnson to the Pfizer. In terms of your view on this, is one vaccine better than the other? Is there much of a difference for us here in South Africa?
Yes, so I know there's this so-called vaccine branding going on. I think hopefully more tongue-in-cheek than anything else.
Right.
Yep. So as you know, the World Health Organization set particular criteria for accepting a vaccine in terms of it being efficacious. Then that level was set at a 50% level of efficacy. So any vaccine that achieves above that 50% is seen as a good vaccine. So when you say a vaccine like the Johnson & Johnson, let's say, has, say, 63 or 75%, efficacy versus, say, Pfizer at 90 or 95%. It's not to say that one is initially better than the other. It's simply because those vaccines have reached a level of efficacy that is protective, in other words.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that if it's 65% efficacy, that 35% of individuals will become infected. It's a bit more complicated than that. So I think we just need to say that whatever vaccine is available,
you should
have access to that particular vaccine, regardless of whether it's an RNA-based vaccine or an adeno-based vaccine.
Right, but just to clarify that as well.
Infection, yeah.
The NICD hasn't, you haven't come out with a comment yet, or findings yet on the Sinovac or the Sputnik. You're talking about now is the ones that have been approved here in South Africa, which is the Johnson & Johnson and the Pfizer at this point.
Absolutely. So I understand that the regulatory authority, which is the South African Health Products Regulatory Authority, has some ongoing program of monitoring vaccine efficacy, and that would include vaccines such as the Sinovac. I'm not sure about the Sputnik, but certainly Moderna as well, and any other vaccines that are.
Available.
I believe there's one from India as well. So they probably seeing what the levels of efficacy and safety are, because of the two aspects. And were they to apply for approval, those particular vaccines, or for emergency use, they would go through some stringent evaluation compared to other regulatory authorities. So again, SAHPRA does look to other regulatory authorities such as the FDA or the British equivalent or the European equivalents to determine what their criteria are and see what the results are and include that as part of their decision making in terms of safety and efficacy.
Can I just shift focus just a little bit to the confusion as to whether we're in a third wave or not? There does seem to be a little bit of confusion in the press. One of our doctors who we refer to here and who brings us our report with Dr. Anton Meiberg said to me yesterday, no matter what anybody says, I can tell you, and that's just from his hospital experience over the last few days, it's bad out there. And he says whether we are officially in a third wave or not, our numbers are very, very scary, and it's no joke. Why does there seem to be a reluctance to call it? Yes, we're in the third wave. No, we're not in the third wave. Is it important?
Yes, I think it determines a particular point, or if you like, an inflection point, if you like, of resurgence. So yes, the numbers are increasing at a particular rate, but they've not reached that level of what is going to be officially called the so-called third wave, where you have a rolling average of 5,000 cases per day. So it is recognized that, in fact, you have what are called upticks and upswings. And these are across a period of time when you certainly see a rate of increase. And those are linked to what we call alert and response. So it's not as if we're saying we must wait for a declaration of a third wave. In other words, there are levels of increase that alert you to the fact that you should be in a state of preparedness, doing your tracking and tracing. Because I think once that inflection point actually happens, that you have 5,000 cases per day, that trace and track, that community level trace and track, probably is going to be overwhelmed in terms of trying to limit further transmission. So again, it's really around the departments of health at province level to have their so-called resurgent plans in place in terms of the readiness around hospital beds, oxygen supplies, healthcare workers vaccinated in this particular instance. And so those are all the elements that as we see these increases happen, be occurring so that when you reach that inflection point when it's officially declared by the National Department of Health that the country is in a third wave, that we are in a state of readiness and are actually managing particular cases. I have heard the anecdotes around hospitals already struggling.
Which is obviously a real concern. Do have to wrap up. Unfortunately, we're about to hit 7 o'clock. But just to ask you quickly, do you think that, or do you have any sense as to whether the third wave will be better, worse, or the same as the second wave?
So a week ago, I would have said that it should be overall, should be not to the same extent as the second surge. But now we do have the additions of at least two of the variants that are found high transmissibility. And so again, maybe the scenario painting will be slightly different if those become the dominant viruses in circulation.
And we certainly will check in with you, Professor Adrian Impurin. Thank you as always, Acting Executive Director of the National Institute of Communicable Diseases, keeping us up to date.